Welcome to the Awake Nations TV podcast. Download our apps and watch our shows at awakenations.tv.
Welcome to the New Jerusalem podcast and welcome to the deep dive.
Thank you. Yeah, it is so good to be here for this one.
It really is. Today we are breaking down the launch material for a brand new series and called The King and the New Jerusalem, Rediscovering Authentic Christianity by Dr. George E. Khoury.
Right. And this material, it basically fundamentally challenges how, you know, millions of people actually understand the mechanics of their faith.
Yeah, it completely shifts the paradigm because, you know, we're going to be looking at whether the version of Christianity that you've been handed is this full resolution original picture.
Or if it's a severely shrunken copy.
Exactly. I mean, think of it like a game of telephone that's been played over 2,000 years.
Oh, yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Like, if the message has been altered or tweaked along the way, how do you even get back to the original source?
Well, Khoury says that to get back to the original, you have to do this really honest assessment of the message we have right now. And he starts with this super provocative opening. He diagnoses what he calls the greatest crisis facing Christianity today.
And it's not the usual suspects, is it? Because usually, you know, you hear about secularism or...
Right, secularism or moral collapse.
Yeah, or like global persecution or church attendance dropping.
Exactly, but he just bypasses all of those entirely. He says those are basically just symptoms.
Okay, so what's the actual disease then?
The root disease, he says, is internal. It's that we have lost sight of authentic apostolic Christianity.
Authentic apostolic, meaning what exactly?
Meaning the very specific, unfiltered message that Jesus and those original apostles actually proclaimed in the first century.
Not the stuff added later.
Right, not the traditions layered over it centuries down the road, and not the variations that popular denominations are teaching today.
And he didn't just come up with this overnight, right? I mean, the material mentions this has been his driving question for, what, 70 years?
Yeah, over seven decades. 70 years of studying and preaching, just tearing the scriptures apart to answer one specific question.
Which is?
What did Jesus, Peter, and Paul actually say? Like, what did they actually proclaim?
Wow, 70 years. And the conclusion he comes to is pretty intense. He claims that millions of, you know, sincere Christians who really love Jesus are operating with a faith that's faulty or, what was the word he used?
Truncated. A truncated gospel.
Truncated, yes. It's like, it makes me think of downloading this massive life-changing software file, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And you think you have the whole program, but then you realize you only got like 10% of it.
Right, exactly.
The rest of the download just failed. So what exactly is in that missing 90%? Like, what got compressed out?
So that missing 90% is what he calls the fuller gospel.
Okay.
And to understand it, we kind of have to look at what was left behind. The truncated gospel that most of us inherited is, well, it's essentially a future-oriented escape plan.
Right, like Jesus died so you can go to heaven someday when you die.
Exactly, which is the baseline assumption for almost anyone sitting in a church today.
Yeah.
But the original authentic proclamation, it was focused on a present reality.
Not just the future.
Right, not just a destination. The core message was that Jesus is Lord right now.
Mm.
It wasn't just that he was crucified and raised. The whole mechanism of this fuller gospel really hinges on the ascension.
That he was enthroned, right?
Yes, enthroned on David's throne at God's right hand.
Okay, so let's unpack that mechanics part, because when you say David's throne, my mind, and I think most people's minds, goes to a physical piece of furniture somewhere in the Middle East.
Oh, sure. A literal historical throne.
Yeah. But Khoury is arguing that this throne was actually moved, right, from the earthly realm into the heavenly realm.
He is. And that shift in location is massive. It changes everything about how we view salvation in history. Because God raised Jesus from the dead and established that promised Davidic throne in heaven at his own right hand, which is the ultimate center of all cosmic authority.
So he already received the kingdom.
He already received it. And at Pentecost, he poured out the Holy Spirit.
Which Peter said was the proof, right?
Exactly. Peter argued that the Spirit being poured out was the tangible, undeniable proof on earth that this invisible coronation had just happened in heaven.
Oh.
He is currently reigning as King of Kings until every enemy is under his feet.
It's like, it's the difference between discovering that the CEO of your company is you know, planning to open a branch office in your town someday.
Yeah.
Versus realizing they are actively running the global headquarters right now and you're already on the payroll.
I love that. You aren't waiting for the company to launch. You're supposed to be working.
Exactly. But if he's ruling right now, that really forces us to rethink how redemption actually works, doesn't it?
It totally recalibrates it. Because if salvation isn't just an evacuation plan for the afterlife, we have to look at what the apostles thought they were actually participating in.
Right.
Curry describes this as the inauguration of a completely new creation.
With Jesus as the last Adam.
Yes. Jesus is the head of a brand new humanity. The source material connects this heavily to the idea of the ultimate exodus.
Okay, so like Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt.
Right, but Curry frames that historical exodus as just a prophetic shadow of the real mechanics of salvation.
So the physical exodus was just the blueprint?
Exactly. Pharaoh was a shadow pointing to a far worse tyrant, which is Satan. And Egypt was a shadow pointing to a deeper captivity, which is sin and death.
And the Passover lamb pointed to Jesus.
You got it. Jesus accomplished the ultimate Passover and the ultimate Exodus. But the really vital mechanism here, and this is where I think modern theology gets kind of stuck, is that it's a two-part motion.
What do you mean two-part?
God brings a people out of something, specifically in order to bring them in to something else.
Out of darkness in order to bring them into the new creation.
Right, out of bondage to bring them into the family of God, into fellowship with the Trinity.
It really reminds me of like a rescue mission or a political defection.
Oh, how so?
Well, if you're fleeing some totalitarian regime, sneaking across the border is just getting out. That's only half of the battle.
Right, you're not safe yet.
Yeah. If you're just standing in no man's land, it's not over. The rescue isn't complete until a new nation actually grants you citizenship, hands you a passport, and brings you into a new home.
That's a perfect analogy.
But looking at modern Christianity today, I mean, why is there this hyper-focus on just the border crossing? Why are we so obsessed with the getting out part that we totally forgot about the bringing in part?
Well, it traces directly back to losing that reality of the present tense kingdom.
Because we push it to the future.
Exactly. If you believe the king isn't really ruling until some later date, then you assume the bringing in part of salvation is just delayed, you know?
Yeah.
Until you die or the world ends.
That makes sense.
But the authentic apostolic message insists that believers are brought in today. Right now, they are formed into a new covenant people, a kingdom of priests, immediately.
Which leads us to the big question of where these citizens actually live, right? The New Jerusalem.
Yes, the New Jerusalem.
And I gotta say, when you hear New Jerusalem, the mental image is basically straight out of a sci-fi movie.
Oh, totally. A giant floating city.
Yeah, a literal gleaming cubic city dropping out of the sky to crush the earth at the end of history.
Which is a wildly popular interpretation of Revelation.
Right. But Dr. Curry unpacks these specific texts, Hebrews 12, Revelation 21 and 22, and Galatians 4, to prove that it's not a physical piece of real estate at all.
No, it's not.
So how does he break those down? Like, how does he prove it's not a future building project?
Well, let's start with Galatians 4. Paul uses this allegory where he contrasts two different Jerusalems.
Okay.
He equates the earthly, physical Jerusalem with Hagar and Mount Sinai, which represents bondage and the old covenant.
Yep.
But then he explicitly states that the Jerusalem above is free and she is our mother. So he is talking about a present spiritual reality, a new covenant community.
Not some futuristic city.
Exactly. And then Hebrew 12 uses similar contrasting language, but honestly, it's the grammar there that really stands out.
And a grammar.
Yeah, it says, you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem.
Have come. Past tense.
Present perfect, actually. Meaning the writer of Hebrews was telling first century believers that they had already arrived at this city.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then Revelation 21 pulls it all together. John sees the holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband.
So the city is the bride.
Yes. It's the wife of the Lamb. It is the church right now.
That completely flips the script on the book of Revelation. Because all that architectural language, the gates of pearl, the streets of gold.
It's poetic imagery.
It's describing the beauty and the security of a people, not a place. It's like, imagine looking at what you always thought was a real estate brochure for the afterlife.
Yeah.
Only to realize it's actually a mirror, just reflecting who you are today. It's showing who God's people are in Messiah's day.
That is exactly what it's doing. But, recognizing the New Jerusalem as a present reality, it forces this massive historical question.
Which is?
Well, if the city is already here and we are already in Messiah's day, then what days are we actually living in? Because the New Testament writers constantly talk about living in the last days.
And when Corey talks about the last days ending, he's zeroing in specifically on the Mosaic age, correct? The
Yes.
provisional stuff, the physical temple, the animal sacrifices, the Levitical priesthood, all of that getting ready to vanish.
Exactly. The last days mentioned by Peter and Paul, they weren't the last days of planet Earth. They were the final fading days of that old covenant
The
administration.
age of Moses.
Yeah, the era of Moses was overlapping with the newly inaugurated era of Christ, but they couldn't just coexist forever, you
And there
know?
had to be a transition.
Right, there was a transition period, and that transition had a definitive, very violent end in AD 70.
Which Jesus explicitly prophesied during his earthly ministry. He told his disciples that within their generation, the physical temple in Jerusalem would be completely destroyed.
And history totally confirms that. In AD 70, the Roman legions surrounded the city, they burned it, and they dismantled the temple stone by stone.
But Curie clarifies the theological weight of that, right? Because the destruction of the temple wasn't the beginning of Christ's reign.
No, not at all. It was the earthly, visible sign that the Son of Man was already enthroned in heaven.
It makes me think of scaffolding around a huge
Oh,
building.
I like that.
Like you need the scaffolding while the construction is happening. And the old covenant, the physical temple, the sacrifices, they were the scaffolding pointing to the real thing. But once the permanent building, the new covenant, is fully operational, the scaffolding isn't just unnecessary anymore, it's actually in the way.
It is in the way.
So in AD 70, the scaffolding was violently torn down to reveal that the permanent structure had fully taken over.
That's spot on. And with that scaffolding completely gone and the old age ended, we arrive at this core, undeniable truth of the apostolic message.
Which is that the king's authority is absolute right now.
Yes, in the present tense. Believers aren't just sitting in limbo waiting for a future rapture, and they aren't waiting for the restoration of some geopolitical, earthly Jewish kingdom. Jesus is king in UNW.
Now, the source material quotes Erne Baxter here, and honestly, the phrasing is brilliant.
Oh, the Aller quote, it is so good.
It really is. Baxter points out that Jesus said, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." Therefore, if Christ has all authority right now, there is no future day when he will have all our authority.
All our authority. I mean, it's grammatically absurd, right?
Yeah.
Which is exactly why it's so memorable. If all means absolute, total sovereignty, you can't add to it. You literally cannot upgrade absolute.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Let me push back on how this actually plays out in reality.
Okay, go for it.
Because if I accept that the king has this absolute, unupgradable authority right this very second, I still have to look out my window.
Right.
I still have to read the news. So if he has all authority, why does the world still look so incredibly chaotic and broken? Why is it so resistant to that kingdom?
Yeah, it is the big question, right? And the material addresses this tension directly by looking at how the king rules.
Okay.
Because the chaos in the world, it isn't due to a shortage of power in the king. It's because the king has chosen to delegate his authority
Delegate it to who?
to his bride. His absolute power isn't supposed to be a spectator sport for his followers. It's the functional fuel for a mandate given to the church.
Ah, so we're back to the union of the king in the New Jerusalem.
Exactly. Christ is the head, and the New Jerusalem, the church, is his body. And they are joined together in what Kuri calls the new creation mandate.
Mean as they work together.
Right. The king doesn't just independently wave a magic wand from heaven to fix earthly problems. He governs and heals and subdues the earth exclusively through his body.
It's like a royal co-regency.
Yes.
You don't just have a king ruling from a distant galaxy while all his subjects sit around passively hoping to be rescued from a burning building,
Yeah.
you know?
Right. They aren't just waiting.
You have a king and a queen working together side by side right now to govern and cultivate a realm.
And the mission of that union is incredibly active. It's to disciple the nations, destroy the works of the devil, and really extend the life, righteousness, peace, and glory of the kingdom of God throughout the entire earth.
So her authority comes directly from him.
Entirely. Her life is his life manifesting in history.
So if you actually take Dr. Curry's argument seriously, I mean, it fundamentally alters your daily reality.
Oh, completely.
The truncated gospel that just told you to hunker down and hold on until you escape to heaven. that is just not the whole story. You are a citizen of the New Jerusalem right now.
Yes.
You are an active participant in a new creation mandate right now.
It really is a profound call to return to the architectural blueprints of the faith, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not about joining a new denomination or adopting some trendy theology.
Boy, it's bigger than that.
It's simply about opening the scriptures and recovering the scale of the authentic message that has been there since the very first century.
And this breakdown, honestly, it's just the starting line of this series.
It really is just setting the stage.
To give you a preview of where we're taking this next, we really have to ask a deceptively complex question. When Jesus and his apostles spoke about the last days, what days were they actually talking about?
Yeah, we introduced the framework today, but diving into the specific historical and biblical mechanisms behind that transition, it will fundamentally change the way you read the rest of the New Testament.
We absolutely cannot wait to get into that with you. Mm-hmm. So here is exactly what you need to do to prepare.
Take notes.
Subscribe to the New Jerusalem on Substack. Follow the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast and the video channel so you don't miss a single deep dive.
And share this.
Yes, share this opening deep dive with pastors, leaders, students, family and friends, anyone who is ready to ask the big questions. And most importantly, for the rest of this journey, bring your Bible.
Bring it. And, you know, I just want to leave you with one final thought to mull over as you go about your day.
Lay it on us.
What if the modern church has been sitting in a waiting room hoping God will do something in the future that he has actually already accomplished in the past?
Oh, wow.
How does stepping out of that waiting room change the way you live your life tomorrow morning?
That is a lot to think about. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Awake Nations TV podcast. Subscribe today and enjoy inspiring kingdom content completely free at awakenations.tv.